Thank you, Anthony, and good evening, Premier, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the Reserve Bank Board, I'd really like to warmly welcome you to this community dinner. Not only is it great to see you all here, but it's also great to see some rain finally in Sydney. And I hope we're seeing it elsewhere in New South Wales as well. The Board and the RBA senior staff really value these opportunities to hear firsthand from you about the challenges and the opportunities you're facing. So thank you for joining us this evening. Given the timing of this dinner, I thought it might be useful for you for me to explain today's decision. As you would have already heard, earlier today, the Reserve Bank Board decided to lower the cash rate by a quarter of a percentage point to 1.25%. This decision comes after more than 2.5 years in which we held the cash rate steady. The last change was back in August 2016, it was some time ago. At its core, today's decision was taken to support employment growth and to provide greater confidence that inflation will be consistent with the medium-term target. I want to emphasise that the decision is not in response to a deterioration in the economic outlook we published just a month ago. The economic outlook for Australia remains reasonable, with the main downside risk being the international trade disputes, which unfortunately have intensified recently. The Australian economy is still expected to strengthen later this year. It's expected to be supported by the low level of interest rates, a pickup in growth in household incomes, ongoing investment in infrastructure, and a brighter outlook for the resources sector. So today's decision is not about a weaker outlook. Rather, it reflects the fact that given the expected pickup in growth, the Australian economy is likely to still experience some spare capacity for a while yet. Today's easing of monetary policy will help us make further inroads into that spare capacity. It will assist with faster progress on reducing unemployment, and it will help achieve more assured progress towards the inflation target. So in a nutshell, that's our rationale. I know that many of you are likely to have questions about today's decision. So I'd like to take this opportunity to provide answers to some of your possible questions. And I'm also happy to answer some of your questions after my prepared remarks or before we have dinner. Now, the four questions that I thought it would be useful for me to answer are the following. First, why did the board act today after having held the cash rate steady for more than 2.5 years? Second, are there more interest rate reductions to come? Third, should today's reduction be fully passed through to mortgage rates? And fourth, what about the savers? Has the board forgotten about them? So I hope that covers the main questions you have, and you'll have an opportunity to ask them all. So first, why move now after holding the cash rate steady for so long? The simple answer is it's the accumulation of evidence. As you would expect, the board is constantly sifting through masses of data, seeking to understand what's happening in the economy, seeking to understand conflicting pieces of information. As we have gone about this task over recent times, there's been a progressive accumulation of evidence in support of two conclusions. The first conclusion is that inflation pressures are subdued, and those pressures are likely to remain subdued for some time. The second conclusion is that there is still significant spare capacity in the Australian labour market. The most recent batch of data provided further evidence in support of both those conclusions. The March quarter CPI was low, and it was lower than we expected, as was the previous reading on inflation. In addition, the wage data for the March quarter again confirmed that wages growth is subdued, although it's picked up from the level a year ago. And the recent labour market report confirmed once again that strong employment growth is not making material inroads into the spare capacity we have in the labour market. And the board judged that the accumulation of this further evidence meant that it was now appropriate to adjust monetary policy. Given the importance of these two conclusions, I would like to elaborate them on them a little and explore their implications. The subdued inflation pressures reflect a number of factors. These include slow growth in wages, increased competition in retailing, the adjustment in the housing market with rents increasing at the moment and the slowest rate in many decades, and various government initiatives to reduce cost of living pressures on households. These factors are all putting downward pressure on prices, and in my judgment, they're likely to be with us for some time yet. Collectively, they have contributed to delayed progress in returning inflation to the 2 to 3% target range. In underlying terms, inflation has now been below 2% for 3 years, and the latest reading on underlying inflation is 1.5%. Looking forward, inflation is still expected to increase, but it's unlikely to be comfortably within the 2 to 3% range for some time yet. So the progress on returning inflation to target is more gradual than we'd hoped. It's important to remember, though, that our inflation target is intentionally flexible, and that the Australian economy has benefited from this flexibility over the past 25 years. The board is aiming to ensure that Australia has an inflation rate that averages between 2 and 3%. The focus is very much on the average and on the medium term. We've never sought to have inflation always between 2 and 3%. The RBA adopted flexible inflation targeting before other central banks, and this flexibility has served us well. It's allowed the board to set monetary policy so as to best achieve the broad objectives with the ultimate aim of contributing to the economic welfare of the Australian people. The flexibility has also allowed the board to look through various temporary factors that affect inflation. This flexibility, however, is not boundless. The point of our inflation target is to provide a strong nominal anchor that helps deliver low and stable inflation, which in turn is an important precondition to sustainable growth in employment and incomes. If inflation stays too low for too long, it's possible that inflation expectations move lower, but Australians come to expect an inflation rate that's sub 2%. If this were to happen, it would make it harder for us to achieve our medium-term inflation goal. So we do need to guard against this possibility. Now moving to our conclusion about spare capacity in the labour market. For some years, most estimates of full employment, including our own, equated to an unemployment rate of around 5%. It was thought that if unemployment went below 5% for too long, inflation would rise and that would become a problem. But given the combination of the labour market data and the recent inflation data, our judgment now is that we can do better than 5%, that we can sustain an unemployment rate of 4 point something. So that's good news. It's also worth noting that the supply side of the labour market is turning out to be quite a lot more flexible than we had earlier expected. The recent evidence is that when the jobs are there, more people join the labour market and other Australians stay and work longer. Reflecting this, right now the participation rate is at the highest level that it's ever been in our history, and that's despite demographic changes that we thought would lower participation over time. It's also the case that people are prepared to work extra hours when the demand for their labour is there. So together these observations support the conclusion that there is still spare capacity in our labour market, and this is likely to remain the case for some time yet. The recent data have given us more confidence in this conclusion, and we've responded to this today. Over the past few years, one concern has been that lower interest rates could add to the medium-term risks facing the Australian economy as a result of high levels of household debt. We do need to keep a close eye on this issue, but this concern has receded recently. Lending practices have been tightened considerably, and many lenders have become quite risk-averse. The demand for credit has also slowed due to the changed dynamics in the housing market and slower income growth. So the risks on this front look to be less than they once were. So this brings me to the second question. Are interest rates going to be reduced further? The answer here is that the board has not yet made a decision. But it is not unreasonable to expect a lower cash rate over time. Our latest set of forecasts were prepared on the assumption that the cash rate would follow the market implied path, which was for the cash rate to be around 1% by the end of this year. There are, of course, a range of other scenarios, and much will depend upon how the evidence evolves, especially, as I said in the post-meeting statement today, how the labour market evolves. But if you accept my argument that a sustainably lower rate of unemployment is achievable in Australia, the question we should all be thinking about is how do we get there? It's possible that the current policy settings will be enough, that we just need to be a bit more patient. But it's also possible that the current policy settings will leave us short. Given this, the possibility of lower interest rates continues to be on the table. Monetary policy does have an important role to play, and we have the capacity to play that role if needed. In saying that, I also want to recognise that monetary policy is not the only option. There are certain downsides from relying on just on monetary policy, and there are limitations on what realistically can be achieved. So as a country, we should also be looking at other options to reduce unemployment, not just monetary policy. One option is for fiscal support, including through spending on infrastructure. This spending not only adds to the supply side of the economy, but also adds to demand at a time we need it. So it works on both the demand and the supply side, which is positive. Another option is structural policies that support firms expanding, investing, innovating, and employing people. All three options should be on the table. From my perspective, though, the best option is the third one. Structural policies that support firms expanding, investing, innovating, and employing people. After all, a strong, dynamic business sector is the best way of creating jobs. Structural policies not only help with the job creation process, but they can also help drive productivity growth, which is the basis for long-term sustainable increases in our living standards. So as a country, it's important we keep our eye on this set of issues. I will now change tack and move to the third question. Should today's reduction in the cash rate be fully passed through to mortgage rates? My usual practice in answering this question has been to explain that there are a range of other factors that influence mortgage pricing, and then say, well, it all depends. There are often reasonable explanations for why the standard variable mortgage rate doesn't move in lockstep with our cash rate. Today, though, I would like to break with my usual practice and provide a clearer answer. And that answer is yes, the reduction in the cash rate should be fully passed through to variable mortgage rates. This answer is based on the recent reductions in bank funding costs. Not only have these costs been lowered as a result of the change in monetary policy, but they've also declined because of movements in market-based spreads. Last year, these spreads increased, and most lenders responded to this increase by raising their standard variable rates by around 15 basis points. Over recent months, though, these spreads have reversed all of the increase that occurred last year, and the spreads have returned to the level they were in 2017. The result has been a substantial reduction at both the short end and the long end in the cost of banks raising funds in wholesale markets, and average deposit rates have also come down. This means that the lower cash rate should be fully passed through into standard variable mortgage rates. Full pass-through would also mean that the economy receives the full benefit of the board's decision today. This brings me to the final question. What about the savers? Have we forgotten about them? I know this is a question on the minds of a lot of Australians, especially older Australians. I'm reminded of it daily as people write to me telling me how the already low level of interest rates is affecting their finances. and I'm expecting to receive more such letters and emails after today's decision. The board had a thorough discussion of this issue at our meeting today. We recognise that many Australians have saved hard and rely on interest income from term deposits to support their spending. Today's decision will reduce their income from this source, and we understand why they would be disappointed with the outcome of today's meeting. At the same time as paying close attention to this issue, the board considered what was best for the overall economy. Our judgment is that lower interest rates will help the economy as a whole. At the moment, this benefit is likely to come mainly through two channels. The first is a lower value of the exchange rate than would otherwise be the case, and the second is a boost of disposable income of the household sector. In aggregate, households pay around $2 in interest for every dollar they receive in interest income. So in aggregate, lower interest rates reduce the net interest payments of the household sector and so boosts household disposable income. In time, we would expect the lower exchange rate and this boost to disposable income to lead to more jobs, lower unemployment, and a stronger economy. And this should benefit us all, although I recognise that in the short run, the effects are likely to be felt unevenly across the community. It's partly because of this unevenness that I want to repeat a point that I made in answering the second question. And that is, the best approach to delivering lower unemployment and a stronger economy is through structural policies that support firms expanding, investing, innovating, and employing people. These policies can have distributional effects as well, but the benefits are more broadly spread across the community. So as I said, as we ease monetary policy, it is in the country's interests that the policy, these other policy options are considered too. So that brings me to the end of my four questions and hopefully satisfactory answers. I hope this has helped you understand the board's thinking and why we took the decision that we did today. Of course, I'm happy to answer any other questions before dinner. And thank you for listening and for joining us this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. As the Governor said, he's willing to take some questions tonight. We have two roving microphones, so please raise your hand and then a microphone arrives, state name, your name, and for the
hour. John Edwards from the Lowry Institute. Phil, thank you for the clear set of remarks, but included the view that in respect of inflation, that if inflation remains too low for too long, then Australians will get used to sub 2% inflation. But what I want to ask is, if we did get used to sub 2% inflation, but we also had sub 5% unemployment, in that circumstance, would that be such a bad thing? That is, it might be slightly embarrassing to the bank not to have inflation 2 to 3%, but wouldn't it be simpler to change the target than complain about sub 2% inflation if GDP is okay?
Well, that scenario is purely hypothetical. I'm confident that if we can get the unemployment rate down, perhaps to 4.5%, there'll be enough pressure on capacity in the economy that inflation will rise. After all, we're not that far away from the bottom of the 2% band. We're maybe 0.5% below. So in the broader scheme of things, we're not that far below. And if we can get the unemployment rate down a bit, perhaps to 4.5%, then I'm confident that inflation will rise back pretty comfortably within the 2 to 3% range. I don't see at the moment any case for changing the framework and for the 2 to 3% goal. It's served us well for a quarter of a century. The discussion in the academic literature, at least, is raising inflation targets rather than lowering them. And the reason people talk about raising inflation targets is if you have a higher average level of inflation, you have a higher average level of interest rates. And if the average is higher, you have more capacity to lower them when you really need to and so support the economy. So I don't see any case for lowering the inflation target. and I think we'll gradually get there, but it's going to take time, and it's going to take a lower rate of unemployment. And hopefully today's decision will help deliver that. So we're in the dark there.
Sorry, Philip Lowe, it's Elise Morgan here from the ABC's The Business. In your speech, you said that the RBA's economic outlook hadn't deteriorated since early May. So why didn't you cut then?
After the May meeting, we indicated that we were watching the labour market very carefully. We'd seen at the May meeting inflation come in lower than expected, and we were watching the labour market outcomes. And since the May meeting, we had confirmation that wage growth remained quite low and the unemployment rate did increase. We're seeing quite strong employment growth in the Australian economy, but it's not driving unemployment down because more and more people are joining the labour force. So as I said in my prepared remarks, that gave us more confidence that the economy could sustain a faster rate of employment growth without putting pressure on capacity. So those two pieces of information we received between the May meeting and the June meeting were really critical and confirmed this idea that the labour market still has a lot of spare capacity, and we're really responding to that today.
James Glynn from the Wall Street Journal. Unemployment in New South Wales is low fours. There's not a lot of hint of wage growth resulting from that. You've told us today that the Naira is 4 point something. Is it probable that it's closer to 4 than 5?
It's possible. You know, my current central estimate is 4.5, but as I said at the parliamentary committee hearing that we had a few months ago, there's quite a large ball of uncertainty around that estimate. So 4.5 is kind of midway between 4 and 5, obviously. I think the experience here in New South Wales with the low unemployment rate is that wage growth is still, you know, it's roughly 2.5%. So that suggests, I think, we can get down to kind of mid-fours without having a wages problem in this country. That's certainly my expectation that we can do that. And we've got an open mind what the right number is. We don't have to make a judgment about that now. The judgment that we make today, progressively over time, is that we can sustain a lower rate of unemployment than we currently have. How much lower? I don't know. I hope it's close to 4, but we don't know yet.
Governor Law, this is Swati from Reuters. In your previous role as Deputy Governor, you had mentioned 1% as kind of being the lower bound on interest rates. Since then, the world has moved in below zero territories. Have your views changed on where the lower bound is for Australia, and do you see benefit in interest rates going below 1% or even 0%? And another question, you mentioned Aussie dollar as lower Aussie dollar as one of the benefits of interest rate cuts today, but there was no reaction in the market today from the rate cut. There's a lot of impetus on the US dollar, which is actually falling, and as a result, a lot of other major currencies are going up. There's expectation Fed will cut rates more than the expectation for RBA is. Do you think that you would have to cut a lot more to make sure that the Aussie is lower?
Well, there are a lot of issues there. The currency didn't move that much, and I think that's largely because the market expected the decision today. I don't think it came as a surprise to many people, and the foreign exchange market is very good at incorporating expectations, and that's what it did today. It's clearly the case that a weaker US dollar, were to come from lower US interest rates, would be a complication for us. Because a weaker US dollar, all else equal, means a stronger Australian dollar, and we don't need that at the moment. A weaker Australian dollar would be helpful for us. It would deliver us more jobs and higher inflation. But that's a market-determined rate, so we can't really do very much about that. But it's true that a weakening of the US dollar would cause us some complications. You asked about our estimate of a lower bound. It's clearly lower than where we are now, and perhaps a reasonable amount lower. If you look at what happened in the United Kingdom, the US and Canada, rates got to 0.25% to 0.5% there. So I think for many economies, that's judged to be kind of the effect of lower bound. I'm not anticipating we get to those levels. As I said in my prepared remarks, the medium-term outlook for the Australian economy is still quite positive. The resource sector is finally in expansion mode again. The terms of trade are rising. There's quite a lot of investment in infrastructure taking place, and household income growth, which has been extraordinarily weak over recent times, is expected to pick up. Wage growth has picked up a bit, and I'm hopeful that the tax measures announced by the government and the budget will get through, and that will both boost household disposable income. So those things are going to keep the economy chugging along at a reasonable pace. So I don't expect that we'll have to get down to the very low interest rates that other countries did. We have the capacity to do it if we need to.
Before we take one from one of the media, any other part of the room with questions? There's one.
Thank you. Bill, no, I was particularly interested in your answer to the second had, and that monetary policy wouldn't really speak to the solution for that. And three, you mentioned that business expansion, business investing, and innovation would be a way to go, and a preferred way for federal government and all government responses, I guess. That's a question. But I'm pleased that in a very wonderfully articulate presentation you made, it's the first time I've heard reference from one of our leaders to the importance of innovation for a long time. And I wondered if you could, probably not tonight, but is the bank going to expand any of its thinking about that absolutely critical function and the community as a whole for any sort of long-term great prospects for this wonderful country?
Well, this is not our core area of expertise. We're experts, hopefully, in money and macro and finance. So how to generate a strong innovation culture in the country, I don't really know how to do that. But what I do know is it's incredibly important. Now, we've made ourselves a wealthy, prosperous country through lots of different channels, one of which has been digging stuff out of the ground or growing stuff out of the ground. I suspect that whether my kids have a materially better living standard than mine is going to depend on what comes out of here, out of people's brains, not what comes out of the ground. So kind of focusing on how we deliver an education system that delivers great ideas and innovation, I think that really needs to be high on the national agenda, but it's not a core area of competency of the Reserve Bank. It's really a general reflection of where future prosperity is going to come from. And you're much more of an expert on this than I am.
Mark Steiner from Stockholm. Thank you, Governor. I was wondering if you could just expand a bit more on the global trade wars and your thoughts about the read-through for Australia and how worried we should be about that.
Well, I'm very concerned about what's happening. It's clearly the biggest threat to the global economy. Australia has benefited greatly from the rules-based international system, and incrementally you see that system being eroded. So I think that's a danger to us and to other trading economies. I don't know any country that's made itself wealthy through tariffs and restrictions. I know a lot of countries, including ours, who's made itself wealthy through being part of an open, rules-based system. So I think it's quite concerning what's happening. In the short run, I see from my international meetings that the uncertainty that's being generated by the trade disputes is leading to firms to delay investment decisions. You can understand why this is happening. You don't know what the final tariff configuration is going to be, so there's uncertainty, so you wait. And this is one reason why we're seeing in Europe, in parts of North America and some of the Asian countries, investment decline, because firms are waiting. They're uncertain, they don't know what the final configuration is going to be. So the more firms wait, the bigger this bigger negative deal this can become. Now, if enough of us wait, it really makes a first order effect to the global economy. So I think it's the uncertainty at the moment that's the issue, and we don't know what the final rules of the game are going to be, and it's affecting business decisions right around the world right now. I don't think Australian business are particularly delaying investment decisions because of this, but if it goes on, they will. So I am quite worried about it.
Will McInnes from the Financial Review. Do you think that there's a danger in having this long period of ultra cheap money that it could distort capital flows, inflate asset prices, and keep alive some of these so-called zombie firms?
Not particularly. I don't see many examples of zombie firms in Australia. I know at the international level people worry about this, but it's not an issue that I are concerned about in Australia. And the level of interest rates as low as you say, but housing prices, remember, in Sydney have fallen 15% over the past year. So the low level of interest rates right now is certainly not inflating housing prices. So I don't worry that a continuation of the current level of interest rates is going to cause problems in the asset markets. Something we need to keep an eye on, but it's not a primary concern at the moment. Maybe one more, and then we should let you have dinner.
Josh Dye from the Sydney Morning Herald. You've mentioned in your speech about how bank funding costs are lower, and yet today we saw two of the four banks not fully passing on that rate cut. Did the RBA miscalculate in thinking that they would pass that on swiftly and fully, and did the banks that didn't pass it on misread the room?
I didn't say that they would pass it through. I said they should pass it through. And I say that because the funding costs have changed a lot, and I think this should have been passed through, and it's disappointing to me that that hasn't been the case. All I can do is encourage people to shop around. If your bank has not passed this through, then I encourage you to go and look for a better deal somewhere else. And the experience has been over recent times that when people do go and look for a better deal from another bank, or even actually ask their own bank, they can normally find a better deal. So I encourage everyone who has a mortgage to go to their bank and ask for a better deal. And if you haven't done it recently, you'll probably find you can get a better deal. Because in the end, the way we get banks to compete with one another is be responsive consumers. We go and search out better deals, we ask for them, and then we switch. So the 25 million of us who live in Australia can make the banks compete effectively, more effectively, by going and asking for a better deal and switching. So I encourage everyone to do that if you're unhappy with the mortgage rate you're currently paying.
On that note of free advice from the Governor.
It's not financial advice, I don't have a licence.
Thank you very much for your questions. And thank you to the Governor for his frank responses. This draws the formal proceedings to a close. Dinner will now be served, and I wish you bon appetit and good evening.